Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Healthspan Academy. I'm your host, Kyle Freiberger. Joining me, my co-host, Craig Schuhart, and a good friend and fellow coach, Brett Goldstein. Brett, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, man, we're pretty excited to jump into some conversation surrounding probably mindset to start off. But a little background about Brett. He's been a coach leader in one capacity or the other over the last 13 years. He grew up, I believe, the son of a couple of entrepreneurs, which gave him a front row seat to what it actually looked like to be a leader and all the challenges that kind of went along with that. You're now in Chicago, but you're originally from New York. Is that correct?
That is correct. Downtown Chicago.
In Chicago, downtown Chicago. Brett's an experienced leader himself. He's led a team of people over the last several years and has always kind of done coaching and leadership along the way, but now he's full-time into the coaching business. So without further ado, let's just jump into some conversation. Brett, what kind of coach are you?
It's a great question. So really mindset, business strategy. I mean, the interesting thing about me, just to tell you a little bit about my background, so for the last 10 years or so, I've been in door-to-door sales, and I never thought that's what I would do, you know, and how I ended up getting into that is my father owned a deli catering business in New York. So standard bacon, egg, and cheeses, and baked all of our own bagels. And I watched my dad get up for work at 1:30 in the morning for my whole life. So I saw what it looked like firsthand to be a quote unquote leader. And what that looked like in terms of, you know, my bedroom was right across my father's. So I'd watch his alarm go off at 1:30. I'd always wake up and I'd see his feet hit the floor, go to the garage, smoke a cigarette, get in the shower, go out the garage door closed, drive down the block. And that's what he did.
Wow.
And, you know, watching that, having that example as a kid growing up, I feel like I didn't have a choice. And then from when I was 7, 8 years old, I was standing on milk crates at my dad's deli doing the cash register and counting out change and, you know, just watching how my dad interacted with the employees and how they respected him and how he always worked and led from the front. And it was just, it was a great example. My mom owned a hair salon. So she was a stylist and, you know, she had that side of her business. So, you know, for me, I saw it firsthand. You know, my dad would never let me, I was never the owner's son. I was never the manager. I was I was doing the work. I was lower than anybody else that worked there. And my dad made sure I learned that lesson at an early age. Yeah. So from there, I don't know if either one of you guys have ever been involved in family businesses, but it can be a challenge. My dad was very old school. You know, his grandfather started the business before him. He was a Holocaust survivor. My last name is Goldstein. Both my grandparents are actually in the Steven Spielberg documentary about the Holocaust. That's a whole different other story. Wow. But they came over from Poland and Romania after surviving the Holocaust, and they ended up meeting in America and starting a family that eventually ended up starting a business here in New York. And I would have been third generation owner. And I lived it. I worked it. I did this thing my whole life. And at one point, the guys that ended up opening the first Vivint Solar office in New York was right around the corner from my dad's shop. And these guys would come in at 11, 12 o'clock after their team meeting would wrap up. And, you know, before they were about to go rah-rah, knock on some doors, and they would come in for lunch. And I was gearing up to be third generation owner. And these guys were just happy. And I'm like, why are you happy? You're at work. Like, it's not supposed to be like that. Like, you're supposed to be miserable. You make money and like, that's what a job is. And then maybe you're happy after work. And that was just, unfortunately, the example that I had.
Yeah. So that's an example a lot of people have, right? Social norms. Yeah.
So long story short, you know, one day, you know, family business wise, my dad was very old school. You'd walk into his office. There was a literal Rolodex on the counter. There was Sharpie on the wall with important information and customers' information. It was just very, if you close your eyes and imagine, it was literally that's it.
The analog system.
That's it. And I wanted to put in point of sale systems and franchise and build, you know, like just new school stuff. And my dad just wasn't about it. He didn't know it. He was, you know, old guy set in his ways, right? Love him to death. That's his process. Mm-hmm. So these guys were trying to recruit me and they're like, look, you're clearly not happy here. You have all the talent in the world. Come work with us. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, guys, I'm good. Mm-hmm. So fast forward a couple of weeks, they kept following up. And I'm like, look, I'll meet you guys one day. No promises, but I'll come see what you do because clearly you guys are doing well and you're happy. So I didn't know they knocked doors. I thought these were like preset appointments. I thought we would go out there and, you know, these customers were waiting for us, but that's not what happened. So I go and meet these guys and I'm wearing a suit and tie. I didn't know it's door to door.
Yeah.
So I show up and I'm wearing a suit and tie, get on my car. I'm like, what house are we going to? Let's make this presentation. And the guy's there with knee-high socks, a polo, and a hat. I'm like, clearly I'm overdressed. So he's like, dude, we don't have any appointments today. We're knocking doors. I'm like, well, this is going to do one of two things for me. I'm either going to love the shit out of this. Sorry, I didn't know if I could do that. Or this is just not for me. And this will reaffirm that where I'm at with my family business, like that's what I need to do.
Yeah.
So I went back and changed, came back and met him. And we went out and knocked for 6-7 hours. And we had a phenomenal response from homeowners.
Wow.
They were respectful of the hustle. You know, we ran into some people that were not great, but such is life, right? But we ended up getting into 3 separate homes with total strangers that ended up signing up for solar with us and wow. offered us water, coffee, tea. We even had lunch with a family, all wow. from door to door. And crazy. This was in New York. This was New York, where I thought people were just going to spit on us. But long
sounds
story
like
short,
throwing you the wolves.
That's what it was.
Just take yeah. action.
Get that's going. What it was. So yeah. we had a great experience. And I watched, you know, the result of that was almost $10,000 in commission for wow. this 26-year-old kid that wasn't even from New York. He actually moved there from Washington. So that was my first experience with it. And then after that, I had told my father, look, like I can do this. Hmm. And I ended up, he ended up selling the business and hmm. ships were burned. So I didn't have an option to go back. And I had to make it work. And now fast forward 8.5 years later, that's where I'm at. You know, I ended up scaling, transitioning out of the business now to focus full-time on coaching. But that was the best thing that's ever happened to me was putting myself out there and learning that business.
That's amazing. So,
2 questions for you right off the bat. How are you not severely overweight after growing up in a deli?
And I got very lucky.
Would you say that your experiences are like your main motivation for getting into like, you know, having that niche of specific kind of coaching style as the mindset? Like, is that what was the first thing for you that got you into your personal development journey? Was, you know, is that foundational principle mindset or kind of what got you into the mindset part of it?
So honestly, my ego was terrible. And if you ask my wife, she would tell you it probably still needs some work.
Yeah,
but
likewise.
In terms of my whole first month in that industry, and I left this part out of the story, but we'll go back to it. You know, coming from an entrepreneurial background and thinking I kind of had it all, I was 24 years old, right? So I thought I knew it all, right? Mm-hmm. But after my first month of knocking doors and watching this person have all this success the first day that wasn't even from New York, to be able to go do this myself, it hurt. You know, I couldn't do it the whole first month. I didn't ask for help. My ego was in the way. Like it was just not good. And yeah. it got to a point 30 days in where I literally was sitting on a curb with my head in my hands crying.
Wow. That's
because crazy. I'm just like, I can't make a sale. People are being like, how is it that people outside of New York that are here knocking on doors in my backyard? And these are my people, mm-hmm. like I'm not getting the responses that they are. Right. And it wasn't until I humbled myself and I reached out to a mentor that's still a very good friend of mine in the office mm-hmm. and said, man, I got to quit. Like, I can't do this. I got to go back with my tail between my legs to my dad and I got to go back to the deli business. Mm-hmm. He goes, right. No, you don't. He goes, you just have to learn to humble yourself and take advice from somebody for a change. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's probably good advice. So I started the entire process all over again of my new hire training. And I started as if I knew nothing because I did. And I learned everything I did from this one guy. And my first year after making no money, my first month at 24 years old, I made $171,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
That's amazing. That's awesome. And that actually kind of leads me into the first thing I want to talk about, which is a growth mindset. Cause that sounds like your sort of aha moment where you go from this point of being fixed and like, why is this not working, to how can I make this better? And I think that's such a huge part of mindset in my own coaching experience. So, talk about that process and your own experience and how you help, how do you figure out a path for a client who is fixed in a fixed mindset and help them crawl out of that cave into becoming more of a growth mindset where they realize it was more possible to life essentially?
Yeah. Good question. It really depends on somebody's level of pain. You know, I talk to my people all the time about this, where nobody needs a solution unless they think they have a problem. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think the coolest thing about, from a coaching perspective, what we do is when somebody finally ponies up their hard earned money mm-hmm. to invest into a coach, they're only doing that because they finally have hit a point where they feel like they actually need help. Mm-hmm. And that's the exciting part about what we do, is we get to be that net for them.
Yeah.
Right. Because their story, they wouldn't have made that investment, right? From a coaching perspective, the money a client invests is not for the coach. It's for the client. It's for the client's commitment. That's why the higher price coaches typically have the better transformations with their clients, mm-hmm. not because they're better, but right. because the more money a client invests, the more meaningful the commitment is. It really, in my opinion, it comes down to somebody first admitting that they have a problem, mm-hmm. which is where the investment comes into play. And then also just their willingness to do the work and what they've been through. I hit rock bottom at that point, because for me, pain was going back and being, you know, my father's been in AA for 25 years. That business almost ruined him. He retired and had a massive heart attack and almost died. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not worth it for me.
Yeah.
So it just depends on where the person's at, to a point where they have to break themselves out of that fixed mindset into a growth mindset.
Right.
And it really just comes down to the level of pain they've tolerated so far, and when they've just said, F it, I've had enough and it's time to make a change.
Yeah. That reminds me of that quote. I can't remember who says it, but the coach's role is to comfort the trouble and trouble the comforted, right?
So I love that. At,
you have to break them out of whatever they're in to get them moving forward. So I'm going to get a little bit deeper into this. Cause when you're in a growth mindset, you almost feel like everybody's in it. It's almost easy to forget that starting point and getting yourself back to where they're at. So what are the signs that are sort of the most glaring signs to you that someone is stuck in this fixed mindset and needs some guidance to get out of it? And then how do you start to rewire them?
Yeah, great question. You know, to me, it's just somebody that knows it all. Somebody that's not like, that was me.
Yeah.
You know, I had guys my first month in the industry were like, man, I see you heading for a wall. I'm like, no, I got it. No, I got it. The most dangerous words in the human vocabulary and sentence is, I already know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you are at a point in life where you're not learning, right? You're not growing, you're not reading, you're not listening to podcasts, you're not expanding your knowledge. There's no shortage of information out there, guys. There's a shortage of people consuming it.
Exactly.
So you just look at people's habits. Mm-hmm. Are you growing? Are you honoring the commitments you're making to yourself? If I watch you, there's an awesome book by Todd Henry called Die Empty. And in there, he talks about a passage called the last day fallacy, where it says, if I were to follow you for one whole day and take notes on every one of your actions, and that one day I turn that notes of mine into the book that stood the testament of your life, how would people view you? And in that day, right, if you're not reading, if you're not educating yourself, if you're just going through your normal routine and it's just like you're in a hamster wheel.
Yeah.
That's the easiest sign there is for me to know that you need help and you need to step out of that, because you can't read the label when you're in the jar.
So mm-hmm. true. That's a great analogy. So I guess the next step, then this, I think anytime there's change, if the change is so big or your perception of it being this huge thing, it's like paralyzing, right? So, and procrastination and stagnation kind of stem from a lack of clarity of that path. So talk about that process of guiding someone through that path and figuring out like what is the nearest target? What is that next step to make it more manageable, to kind of get them out of that phase?
What's the best way to eat an elephant?
Yeah, man.
You just start diving in. Yeah.
Action creates traction. Yeah. When it comes to you know, myself or a client or anybody that I'm talking to, the free content I'll put out, just start taking action. You're going to get it wrong. That's the point.
Action even.
But it's 100%. It's when you start moving forward, the path starts to reveal itself. That's just what I've seen firsthand, right? Because you might not know what the end result looks like. And chances are, if you do have a certain vision about it, when you do start taking action, it's not going to look anything like you thought it would.
Right.
You can't be married to the end result. What I see is people tend to overplan and overanalyze and all this other stuff. And they get so fixated on, I have to know exactly what the end result looks like, that they forget to take the most important step, which is the action.
Yeah.
So it's little incremental progress that ends up turning into something bigger, but detaching from the outcome.
Right.
You don't need to know what it's going to look like. You just got to start taking steps and then you'll figure it out. That's the biggest thing, is don't be afraid to just fail. Don't be afraid to learn.
Yeah. There's huge value in just micro goals, right? Just breaking it down. Like if you, the first step to going to the gym is putting your shoes on. And that's like, seems like such insignificant thing, but it's huge. If it gets you towards the next step, that serves its purpose, right?
In the door-to-door space, they say it all the time. The hardest door is your car door.
Yeah, I believe it.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Or it's like climbing a mountain, right? You don't focus on getting to the peak of the mountain. Just enjoy the view as it gets better and better and better and better. Like, isn't that the way to live life? You get to the peak and it's just like, okay, now what? The only way is down. Like, why would you want that in your life? I just want to keep going, right? Kind of as you guys were talking about, you brought failure up. Like, why is it so important? Why is failure so important? And how do you persevere? How do you view failure in a way that's constructive?
First attempt in learning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. You can't figure it's, you're never going to get it right the first time. And if you do, you're not going to appreciate it anyway. If my head was not in my hands crying for 30 days, I wouldn't have hit that breaking point where I knew I needed to transition from a fixed to a growth mindset. Mm-hmm. Anything that comes easy to you, you don't appreciate.
Yeah, that's so true. How do you push through? How do you push through failure? How do you get okay with failing?
Build a better relationship with it. You know how many times I've heard the word no?
Mm-hmm.
I knocked on doors for 8 years. How many times do you think I heard the word no? A million? 800,000? I don't know. To me, every no leads me closer to a yes. Mm-hmm. And if you're not active, some people are so afraid of no, it doesn't mean anything. Every no leads you closer to a yes. And in my old industry, you got to learn to quantify your no's. You know, from a sales perspective, if you know you need 4 no's to get a yes. Okay. If on my yes, let's say from a financial perspective, I make $1,000 just for easy numbers. That means every no is worth $250.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell me no. That's $250 in my pocket.
Yeah,
I can't get that yes without a no. So not everybody is another great quote is some will, some won't, someone's always waiting.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just build a better relationship with failure. You got to redefine what that means to you. It's not personal. It's just part of the process.
I think another thing people typically misunderstand is when people say no to you, they're not saying no to you. They're saying no to what you're offering, right? They're not saying no to you as a person. So it's definitely a big learning curve, and you know, getting comfortable with that for myself has definitely enabled me to persevere, right? Push through, find those things we need to work on and grow from them. So I want to talk a little more. I keep wanting to like peel that onion of failure because it's just such a dominant thing in our world, right? Like that, the negativeness, the scaredness of failing. Why, you know, some of the stuff I've read over the past couple of years is all to do with ego, like we talked about, and then the brain in general. Like, why does the brain default to negative? Like, you know, why is that our default? It's the survival mechanism, right? Like, why? How do you push through? How do you think that one through?
Yeah, I mean, I think a mutual mentor of both of ours, you know, defined it the right way, right? I mean, it's your brain is a 10 million year old piece of survival hardware, right? So if you don't intentionally upgrade that, right, we're wired to think that we're still living in caves and there's a saber-toothed tiger outside that if we go outside, it might be death, right? So a lot of people are on autopilot, and I heard a nice I heard a speaker once talk about the fact that our phone's operating system upgrades on almost a weekly basis. But most people live their whole life with the original software they had, yet they're getting older, but their software is remaining the same. So 95% of who we are as people was formed subconsciously from the ages of 0 to 6, right? Mm-hmm. At that point, you're a sponge. That's why if you want to teach a child a foreign language, perfect time to do it is when they're a baby. Mm-hmm. So, right. Because there is no filter, it's just everything's going in, right? There's no filter. So most people live that same story from the people that raised them their entire life. Their limiting beliefs are not even their own. So if you were raised with this broken money mindset, right? If it's money doesn't grow on trees and you can't have whatever you want and your dreams aren't possible. If you still feel that today, that's because your story was pre-programmed by somebody else that was also a flawed human being, regardless of how much you might love that person. That person was maybe a parent of yours. Yeah. So if you don't get to a point in your life where you start to consciously reprogram yourself, you're going to live the rest of your life with somebody else's limiting beliefs.
Right.
So you have to intentionally upgrade yourself in order to get to that next level.
For sure. Wow. I totally agree. And Colin and I've talked about that before. Like I grew up, I love my dad, fantastic father, but he's stuck forever in a fixed mindset. And that's just how he raised us. And it's just like, you kind of have a finite number of cards to play and that's it. Right. And it's not something that changed for me overnight, but I still find myself once in a while kind of settling back into that. It's just like, it's perpetual, right? You're constantly fine tuning and trying to get yourself out of that. I want to segue a little bit outside of the schema mindset in terms of like, so that's obviously just one piece when we're coaching and some piece, we got to get them a plan. We got to get them accountable. Once you have that plan together and they start the wheels rolling, is mindset something you circle back to intentionally? Or do you, when someone's working their way through a program, do you kind of like anticipate where they're going to struggle? Do you do a mindset based meeting, or do you just kind of go off fly off the cuff? Like what's your strategy around that?
Yeah, great question. I mean, it's different per client, right? I mean, I'm fortunate enough, and this is the conversation Kyle and I have often, is I've probably interviewed 7,000 people in my 8 to 10 year sales career.
Wow.
Where, you know, with door to door, there's just so much turnover, right? So you're always having to meet new people because it's a tough job. Mm-hmm. So I've encountered so many different people, so many different personalities, and I've created so much content over the years running sales meetings with different people all throughout the country that I don't want to say I have it all figured out. I don't, but I've created a ton of different content that I know lands and resonates with so many different people.
Right.
So I really try and approach my programs where everything is tailored to the individual, right? So I'll always meet with somebody. I'll get to know them, figure out kind of a needs analysis, and then I can prescribe different things that I've either created in the past or I can put together for that person over whatever the coaching program time period is, 10 weeks, 6 months, whatever we're doing together to make sure that I get my point across. But I'm never leveraging a tool to do the job that I should be doing one-on-one with you, because we need to figure out what that looks like before I just say, here's an accountability tracker. Now keep score of your habits and thanks for the investment. Yeah. Like that's not what this is about. It's about caring and listening and going deeper with somebody and helping them to uncover those things. But mindset will always be the cornerstone that you'll come back to. That's the foundation of the house.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, you see the direction kind of in the industry with AI kind of developing and taking over and make automating stuff. You can't automate those kind of things, right? The mindset, it has to be that face-to-face. You can't program a bot to get someone to get into a better mindset or keep like maybe accountability, like, hey, great job, keep going. You can add that kind of stuff in. But in terms of like anticipating and develop a relationship, there's nothing that will ever replace that. So I like that answer. I want to circle back to your own personal habits, Brett. So, and I think this is, man, as a coach, like a lot of people just think we have everything figured out and our physical, our nutrition is perfect. And we work out 7 days a week and multiple times a day and our mobility is perfect and we're never injured and all this. It's just this perfect thing. But obviously we're human. We have our issues and we fall into caves ourselves. So, and there's a lot of different directions we can take and coaching can kind of pull you into different directions with stuff you want to work on. So we obviously have mobility. We need to work on our strength, our conditioning, our own mindset, our nutrition habits. And it's easy to kind of get lost. And I find it easy to kind of keep take an area of focus every once in a while. So I want to know where your focus is at with your own personal habits, and what do your personal habits look like around that focus?
Well, first off, you can't pour from an empty cup.
Right.
Right. So if you're not constantly filling yourself up, if you're not getting coached, great coaches have coaches, you're going to end up just hurting. Right. I mean, because eventually you're not going to have anything left to give. And that's where you start sleeping in. That's where you start skipping out on your habits. Right. So you have to be being held accountable from somebody above you. First off, I'm very intentional about the people I surround myself with. You have to be better than me.
Yeah.
You just have to, because I always want to be reaching up to that next level. So, you know, big thing is Kyle and I are in a Slack group with 40 something other people. Some are clients, some are coaches, and that's an open invite for anybody. This is a free thing that we do. But a big part of that is the night before, you have 30, 40 people that are posting what I like to call their execution list. Because if you were to close your eyes the night right before you're about to go to bed and say, what does my perfect morning look like? And you wrote that down, woke up at X time. What's the first thing I do right now? For me, I love to meditate first thing in the morning. Then after I meditate, I want to go to my gratitude journal while I'm feeling really, really grateful and thankful. Write out three things I'm grateful for. After that, I'm fortunate to live in a beautiful building in Chicago. I'm on the 41st floor. My gym is on floor 47. I'm going up to the gym. Nice. So already I have some good things going. While I'm there, I'm a huge fan of Ed Mylett. I love his style. I love his content. I love the way he interviews. I'm listening mostly to an Ed Mylett podcast or something along those lines. So I already have got out of bed on time, win number one, right? Meditate, win number two. Gratitude journal, win number three. Gym, win number four. Podcast, win number five. Come back. Healthy breakfast, win number six. And now I'm just compounding my wins.
Right.
So as I continue to do that, now I posted my execution list the night before. I'm waking up and honoring my commitments. And now I have my Slack group where I'm posting out photos of me doing all of this.
Yeah.
And do I wake up more? Do I wake up motivated every morning? No. But thankfully, I'm Central Standard Time. There's quite a few people in the group that are East Coast, that are in London and different places. So when I wake up not feeling great, I get to look at my phone and I go to Slack and I'm seeing people that are living it, that are hours ahead of me, where it's like, what's my excuse? And now I start taking action because we've created this accountability group. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's, I like to build systems and processes because I know I'm a flawed person.
Yeah.
I know I'm not always going to wake up motivated.
Yeah.
But if I see Kyle on the East Coast, who's already up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I like to sleep in a little bit, traditionally I get up at about seven. Kyle's already got seven wins in on me, if not 10 or 20. Now it's like game on. I know what I have to do to get myself going, but I'm not relying on myself to wake up motivated every day. And I'm making sure I have a plan in place from the night before.
Because I love that.
A formula for a great morning is going to bed with a great plan. It's not it's not waking up and hoping you're motivated. Keeping your fingers crossed is not a good strategy for success.
I love that. I love the concept of stacking wins first thing, especially because everything you listed there, there's no real reason for interference, right? You're not, no one else is involved. It's just you. So there's like, I think once you start getting your day, you start answering emails or start like, you know, taking work calls or whatever, that stuff just kind of can get in the space and start to interfere and get you out of your way. Whereas you know your priorities, that mental health, hitting that meditation first thing, getting to the gym, then it's non-negotiable. It's out of the way. It's not weighing on your mind the rest of the day. And you can just focus on the rest of the day, whatever needs to get done. I love filling up that cup,
right? You know, you can't pour from an empty cup. Like you alluded to earlier, you got to fill that cup up. You fill it up in the morning first thing, then, you know, the rest of the day, you can kind of help other people.
Yeah. I love that. That's gold. So before we run out, so obviously we talked about podcasts, and I think you've probably been crushing just as many or more audiobooks podcasts as we have, especially since the pandemic hit. That's kind of replaced all my personal social time. It's just like filling my ears full of podcasts and info and all stuff like we're doing here. Is there a meaningful, and you mentioned, what was the name of the book you mentioned on earlier?
Die Empty by Todd Henry.
Die Empty. We'll put a link to that. Is there another reference that you picked up in the last, since the pandemic hit, that has kind of stuck out with you?
I mean, the first book I recommend to everybody, to every one of my clients, it's almost non-negotiable if we're going to work together, is The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. It's like 100 pages. It is the easiest book in the world to read. but it is the cornerstone of habit building, in my opinion.
Awesome. That's sweet. Yeah. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Brett, well, I appreciate you sitting in today. It was a great chat. Appreciate hearing your insight and we'll have to do this again sometime.
100%, man. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you guys' time.
Cheers.
Yeah, man. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in today, guys, and HealthSpin Academy. And we'll see you next time.